It should have been a great day. It would have been a great day if not for that 4 o'clock call from Harry Bomford. Grim, humorless Harry, everybody's favorite sack of melancholy. How he ever got to be Speaker of the House, only God knows, though that is open to debate, since no one ever accused Harry of being on speaking terms with the Almighty. "Jerry, this is critical," says Harry. "You've got to meet with this guy. He's got a lock on 10,000 or 15,000 union guys, which he can deliver this November. All he needs is a little schmoozing. You get the picture? Just butter him up a little. And if he starts getting into H.R. 2365, tell him we're with him. Okay, so we're not with him, but in November we'll hand him some bullshit line about terrorists, or the Canadians, or the Japanese whalers, and he'll come away happy. Trust me, I know this guy. All he wants is a place at the table. So, you'll meet him, a couple of drinks at Barbary's, that's all. Thanks, I owe you. Click." Jerome C. Tolliver, four-term incumbent from the once great state of California, carefully fashioned the knot in his tie. A nudge left, a little tighter. Perfect. He took a moment to evaluate his reflection in the mirror. Hairline receding somewhat, but still acceptable, with a little extra comb-over. A trace of elegant gray over the ears. A few lines on the face, bespeaking character, not age. He smiled, showing 8 perfect teeth. Not pretty boy handsome, but attractive enough, considering the clout he had to go along with it. At least that was the effect he'd had on Alice Vecchio. Alice, now there was a babe he could relate to. Blonde, well-stacked, just pushing 40, but trim and tidy. Her only problem? Something upstairs. Smart as hell, law degree, summa cum laude. And there she was, wasting all those assets in a hole-in-the-wall office in Slumtown, fighting the good fight for the poor, the downtrodden, the neglected. Never winning much, of course, but still in there, pitching day in and day out. With equipment like hers, she could have been taking down 7 figures with any of a dozen lobbyists. But Alice preferred her own drumbeat. She wanted to matter. She didn't, she never would. That's how it worked in this town. He hoped she'd never catch wise to that. She made a nice punchboard for Jerome C. Tolliver and others of his standing. He recalled last night at the out-of-the-way motel in Alexandria. Now that was a night. Yes, it would have been a great day, except for that phone call from Harry Bomford. One last check in the mirror. Gray striped tie, navy double-breasted suit, properly positioned gray handkerchief, hair in place. He snatched up the car keys from the hall table and left his Watergate apartment and took the elevator to the basement garage. His vintage powder blue Jaguar XJ12 was glistening, recently washed and polished. Once in a while he thought about trading it in for a new model, but he never got past the just-looking stage. Nostalgia, maybe, or the envious looks he got from his compatriots who couldn't or wouldn't emulate him. Some married with kids, impractical. Others too cheap to make the investment, others just plain drab. He got in, revved her up, and pulled out of the garage into the warm Washington sun. Tolliver exited the elevator and started down the long corridor toward his office on the 3rd floor of the Rayburn Building. He had a corner suite, thanks to his seniority and the correct party affiliation. The Democrats had been in total control now for 1.5 years, and showed no signs of loosening their grip on the House or the Senate, and certainly not the White House, where the new incumbent had 2.5 years left to solidify his many groundbreaking programs and enhance his own personal popularity. It wouldn't be hard. The Republicans were wandering in the wilderness, trying to decide who and what they were. Conservatives? Moderates? Democrat lights? Anything you can do, we can do better. Rudderless and foundering, their prospects for the fall elections were abysmal. Perhaps not that good. Yes, it certainly was a good time to be a Democrat from an ultra-safe California district, a time when money flowed in from every direction, and all you had to do was vote your conscience. Well, perhaps not always, but when the funds were available, the conscience was able to step outside for a smoke. He pushed open the door into his outer office. Katie flashed him a welcoming smile. "Good morning, sir," she said. "Good morning, Katie," he flashed back, always happy to see her happy face, which was mostly happy no matter what was going on. Katie Moran had been with him 17 years now, starting in the early days at the California Law Office. Then she'd been his secretary. She was still his secretary, but you couldn't call her that anymore, not without the ACLU hauling you back to the woodshed for a good whomping. She was an office aide, personal assistant, confidential file clerk, something like that. He couldn't remember. Whatever it was, it paid a hell of a lot better than California.